Today, we know who we are, and we respond to that knowledge. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campbell, California, with a thought for today. Today, we know who we are, and we respond to that information, that knowledge. Who are you? Are you your name, or are you your reality? Are you your human self, or are you your divine self, or are you your God self? Who are you? What does the world think of you? Does the world think that you are a very special person? Or does the world think that you are just a wonderful, another human being? Then it's a compliment to be called another human being by the world, because that means that you're one of them. I mean, you're a human being. You're one of them. It's like you're from outer space. But you're a human being. And what does a human being do? A human being lives within the parameter of a human being. And that's fine to live within that parameter of a human being, but while you're living within that parameter, there's no growth. There's no expansion of your awareness of just who you really are. We've been told by philosophers and religious leaders and psychologists and psychiatrists and scientists that there is more to this life than we see. There is more to this than appears on the surface. As we have seen in that Bleep movie, they point out that thoughts are things and really things, and that we create our world by our thoughts. And what kind of thoughts do we have? Now, is your thought that you are a genius? Is your thought that you are a marvelous person, a desirable person? Is your thought that life is filled with wonder and magic and goodness? Is that your thought? If that's your thought, then that's what your experience is going to be. But if that's what your experience is going to be, don't expect the rest of the world to understand. Because they're going to say, come out and play. Why are you sitting in meditation? Come out and play. Why are you sitting in introspection? Come out and play. Why are you saying your affirmation? Why are you practicing the piano? You know? Come out and play ball. You know how the kids say to the other kids, you shouldn't be practicing the piano. And of course, the young Paderewski, he practices the piano and he finds himself and becomes extremely wonderful at the piano. But he never would if he followed his human friends who wanted him to do what they did. Now, if the mother had been wise, she would have moved to a neighborhood where every child played the piano, where every child practiced the piano. Then that would be the thing that children would do when they came home from school, and when they came home to the family house, they would practice the piano. And they wouldn't say, Johnny doesn't have to, because they're all practicing the piano, and they're all coming along extremely well. This is why when, as we spoke the other day, a king cannot allow his children to play with the commoners. He cannot allow his children to associate with them because then he will think like them. The king, you might say, is a spiritually illumined being, and his family are spiritually illumined in a relative way of speaking, and all other people who are not spiritually illumined would tear him down. And so he has to be careful who his children associate with. Now, the king and the queen, they're above that. They're untouched by what the people say. They're untouched by what happens in their world. They create only in their world what they want. But the children feel a sensitivity, like with Siddhartha. When Siddhartha woke up to the fact that there was sin, suffering, death, and unhappiness, he wanted to get away from this make-believe kingdom that he lived in that said those things didn't exist. And when he went off by himself, he didn't find it any easier because he gave himself in to the motivation of finding out why people die, why there's illness, why there's poverty, why there's unhappiness. And you know what he found? No answer. So what he did, he treated, prayed, and he did what the other members of his group didn't do. He went to the boa tree, sat there, meditated, And they were sitting by the side of the road watching him. And that's really cool, huh? Yeah. And so he had his experience. And then he came to them and he said, "Boys, I tell you what, we've been going the wrong direction. It's time for us to party. We're going to go out and we're going to eat and we're going to dance and we're going to sing and we're going to party and we're going to live it up." And his friend says, "You're crazy, you know, after flagellating yourself for so long as a monk, and now you're just going to let it all go and because you want to party?" Well, now, he didn't tell him everything. He didn't tell him that he is no longer living a life of limitation and trying to find his spiritual self by depriving himself. He is now going to fully indulge himself in life, and he's going to live in a harmonious way, in harmonious activities in his life. And so he did. Now, what about you? Are you the son and daughter of the king and queen? Are you living in your royal palace and kept from knowing about what the problems of the world are? Or do you know what the problems of the world are? And are you part of the problem? This is something we all have to decide. Who are we? What role are we playing? What is our thought? What is our idea for ourselves? Do we want to live our life from our highest and our greatest perspective? We can. Or are we going to live like our neighbors live? Are we going to live like other people in the world live, who feel limitation, sickness, illness, lack, and all the other things that people live? Have you ever noticed? Master has everything. A master has a car, not necessarily owning it, but when he wants it, it's there. A master has food. When he wants it, it's there. A master has clothing. When he wants it, it's there. Whatever he wants. And as with Jesus, the seamless robe, the very finest clothing available in the entire area, better than the kings had. The kings had royal robes with lots of color on it, but he had the seamless robe, the finest that could be made, you know? So, you see, walking your spiritual path is not a poverty path. It's not what they say, the vow of poverty. What do we say, Ellen?
Vow of non-possession.
The vow of non-possession. So, we here at the Absolute Monastery have all taken the vow of non-possession. We own nothing, and yet we have everything to use. We have everything available to us for whatever our needs is. Sylvia's computer went kaput, and a new one was there. Sylvia's screen went kaput, and a new one was there. Ellen's screen went kaput, and a new one was there. Now, they've been using them for years and years and years, and so it wasn't like they were a brand new one having a problem. It was an old one that had served very well, and now was ready for change. Well, poof! And when Sylvia needs something, she says, "Ellen, I need this." And Ellen says, "Okay, let's go get it." When Ingeborg needs something, she says, "I need this." And they go and get it. See, they do not live in poverty. They live in non-possession. And I think that's a very big thing. We use the word vow of poverty because the government accepts that as a status that churches have and monasteries have. And so we use that because that's a beneficial thing to use. And so why not? You know, why not? If we were to pay taxes on this place, we would not live here, because the taxes we would pay would be more than we would pay for living in a very pleasant house somewhere else. And you have to really want this to do that. So we have it as a nonprofit corporation, and it is just excellent. And because it's excellent, it is so comfortable and wonderful to be in, and everyone who comes here feels the vibrations that we have here, because this is a spiritually illumined place. And it's spiritually illumined to everyone who comes here if they are spiritually illumined. People who come here who are not spiritually illumined, they just think it's a nice place. And that's okay. And you say there are people who come here who are not spiritually illumined? Well, I don't say that our handyman is not spiritually illumined, but he might not be. And we have had guests from the neighborhood that we've invited in to see who we were and that we're not strange people. And so they came to meet us and enjoyed seeing the property and seeing our home here. And we have invited them again on this Sunday for our open house and our 30th annual event here. 30 years we've been in business here up in the mountain. 30 years we've had this school and this church and this organization, and 30 years of continuous operation without a break and without a problem. Every month our bills are paid. Every month all the obligations are current. Every month. And we intend to keep it that way. Now, that's all because we live in independent wealth. We live in divine abundance. Now, what about you? What is your choice for yourself? Do you want to live in divine abundance? Do you want to live in the realization from your spiritual point of view? Or do you want to live from your human point of view? If you live from your human point of view, you'll be living harmonious with your neighbors, you'll be living harmonious with your family and friends, and everything will work out beautifully. If you're living from your spiritual point of view, you have no family, you have no friends, you have nothing except your divine self, and you enjoy everything. And when you want to go somewhere, you go. You don't have to ask anybody, you don't have to prove what you're doing to anybody, because you're a free spirit. So, when you reach that step of spiritual illumination, remember, people may not understand you, but it doesn't matter. You do. And if someone wonders about you, a husband or wife or something like that, or children, and they say, how come you're going here and how come you're going there? How many men who and women who are not spiritually illumined go off to meetings, go off to activities? They spend two-thirds of their time traveling around the world, going to meetings and attending functions, and nobody questions it. Why should they question you? When you think they question you, they'll question you. When you know that what you're doing is for your highest and best, but makes you happy, then there should never be a question from anybody, especially not yourself, as to why or what you're doing. Kind of neat, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what we're talking about, isn't it? That's what this is all about. Living in the now. So, let's live in the now and realize that when we live in the now, we have two choices. We can be relative, human, or we can be absolute, divine. And either one is perfectly acceptable, because when you came here, you came here to be yourself and have fun. When you leave here, you're going to go and be yourself and have fun. And what's so sacred, so special about that? Except that it's nice. We do not have to spiritually illumine ourselves. We do not have to do these. We already are. It's just a matter of looking there and seeing it. But it's not something that, oh, you've got to go to church, you've got to study this here, you've got to improve yourself spiritually, you've got to improve your, you've got to help your neighbor, you've got to help yourself, you've got to go out and feed the sick, the poor, the hungry, and lonely, and so forth. And you don't. Because if you really are doing your show right, your eyes are pure, and you see everybody just like you, abundant, happy, whole, and healthy. Nice, huh? That's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you.